From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationships with it. I'm Chris Chernia.
And I'm Claire Wiley. And our first guest this morning is award-winning graphic designer Esther Gonzalez, who has just created a book called Atlas of a Threatened Planet, 150 infographics to help anyone save the world. In Atlas of a Threatened Planet, Gonzalez uses full-color creative graphics to explain the most critical threats to our environment, from shrinking glaciers and declining biodiversity to shifting ocean currents.
Good. Then that's in the first part of the show. Then local Anna Robertson, co-founder of The Cool Down, joins us to share more about her mission to make it easier for everyone to help themselves while they help the planet. She'll provide her best tips on how to be more sustainable in our homes, especially as we move into the colder months. All that and some news on the opening of COP16. That's the largest UN-sponsored conference on planet biodiversity, not climate change. That's a separate COP. This is a really critical meeting. We'll talk about what it means and what hopefully it might accomplish. Environmental awareness and education, that's what this Green Earth is all about.
And joining us first is Esther Gonzalez, who is an award-winning graphic designer who has been shifting her gaze and talents to creating easily digestible infographics on the climate and the issues we are facing. So first, Esther.
Yes, hello. Good morning,
hi.
Claire.
So Esther, first, we like to get a little background on our guests, and we'd like to learn more about you. And what set you on this path, not only as a graphic designer, but then in shifting towards tackling these big issues and bringing them into easily digestible pieces?
Yes, well, I studied information design, so focused myself on presenting often scientific knowledge really easily to a broader public, because it can be quite overwhelming and complex. And throughout my studies, I really found that that was the most challenging aspect of graphic design, because it also, yeah, connected me with my really big interest in climate change and in the environment. And so over the years, I've, written 8 books. My 8th book just came out. And I work a lot for NGOs as well, create information graphics for them and for quite a lot of universities when scientists need the help to communicate their findings.
So take us through that book path then. You said you've written 8 books. What was this first book that kind of delved into our climate?
It was called The Climate Book.
Oh, well, there you go.
In 2012. I have done a second one since in 2019, which I've updated. I've worked together with scientists from Germany on the very first book mainly, but also connected with quite a few international scientists from all over the world. At any time when I find a study that's really interesting, I connect with the scientists, and they're often very helpful and very interested in communicating their science through infographics and having that spread, that knowledge.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, that skill set to distill something down, because these topics are very, very big topics. And when you look through your books, in particular Atlas of a Threatened Planet, you have very much taken these big, heavy topics. You're tackling them in a way that does make them easily digestible and people can have a greater understanding. And can you tell us kind of how you have structured this book and how you've laid it out so that people can follow along?
Yeah. So in this book, I thought I'll take out a couple of the spheres of the Earth, the atmosphere, all the air we're breathing, but also the climate effects and the hydrosphere, because it's closely related and interconnected with the climate. So everything water on the Earth. Then the biosphere, that's all animals and us humans interacting with the environment and plants. And then the last is the anthroposphere. And that's everything that we humans have changed on Earth, like infrastructure, and have added to, like cities and, also raw energy extraction, for example, in agriculture. And, those are the four chapters of the book. So people get a really broad knowledge of all different types of interactions, human interactions, but also natural interactions that create the climate we live in and interfere with it or work together in a tight network.
Right, because basically three of those spheres, the atmosphere, the hydrosphere, and the biosphere, work just fine with each other in our absence.
That's right.
And then the anthroposphere, i.e. us, come along, and that's where the problems occur or the challenges occur. So give us some examples of how the anthroposphere impacts each one of those other spheres, the atmosphere, the hydrosphere, and the biosphere.
Yeah. For example, if you take infrastructure and you look at Brazil and the Amazon rainforest, mm-hmm. as soon as you have one road cutting through the rainforest, there will be loggers coming to use this road, which will attract, for example, other industry to start up a little town. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you know it, there's going to be agriculture because those people living there need food, right? And so all of a sudden you have raw energy extraction, maybe as well, some rare earths that are found in this area, and more rainforest gets destructed, which then changes the whole microclimate of that region and makes it drier because the rainforest is creating clouds and rain naturally. And so all of a sudden you're not only having a cut of forest, so a cut into the biosphere, but also the hydrosphere, and ultimately as well, the atmosphere. You're changing everything at once. So that's a good example.
Right.
And one of the infographics in the book shows exactly that.
That's a perfect example, because even the road itself, like you say, introduces a number of knock-on effects, but the road itself creates a compartmentalization of the bio or the ecology of the area, right? Animals
That's
are
right.
cut off from their pathways. We see it here across the U.S., you know, that roads have a huge impact on ecological systems.
Yeah. Definitely. Also stormwater runoff, if you think about these things, or genetic diversity, because animals are, cut off from spreading and interchanging DNA. So there's a whole lot of problems sort of that, are entailed. And 95% of all deforestation happens right around infrastructure worldwide. That's another fun fact you can find in the book.
Quote unquote fun fact, how does a book laid out as a series of infographics help deliver a message better than, say, the classic, more narrative style of writing?
Yeah, so it's you got to delve into a little bit of brain and neuroscience, because the way our brain works is that it takes a long time to process information when it's written, but it takes only a fraction of a second for us to understand an illustration or a photography. And so these illustrations, they are connecting with your brain very quickly. And if you create an infographic that on the first sight, like a poster that you drive past an ad on the street, on the first sight, the infographic already delivers so much information to you that you actually know roughly what it's about. Then it's much easier for the brain to process all the little information and text bits that are arranged in the infographic. And it's also an interactive way of learning. Mm. So you're connecting with different parts of the brain, which will help you understand it better and also retain the information.
And you see in the book, obviously, when you're looking through these illustrations, that intersection of, you said, like how we are interacting with the planet and what those changes were causing to the planet. And like you said, I think we are very visual and we absorb things easier if we see them in this manner. So I'm looking through a couple pages here, and it looks like there is so much probably editing that is being done to bring this to this, like distilling this down. How do you decide what goes in there, what's most important, and what hits that cutting room floor?
Yes, that's a very good question. I closely work with scientists from the beginning of each book. And I literally sent, maybe to a senior scientist, I would send a list of topics to start out for my atmosphere chapter, and would connect with them and ask them, did I miss something really important, or do you feel like I could add another subject? So it's really the communication with scientists that helps me to distill down to the different infographics and the topics. But also just my curiosity in each topic sort of, gives the direction of what I'm going to put in and not. And I'd like to give a big overview, but at the same time, I love delving into a little detail just to show the complexity and to give people a better idea of the whole big subject.
We're speaking with Esther Gonstala. She's a graphic designer and author of her most recent book, Atlas of a Threatened Planet, 150 Infographics to Help Anyone Save the World. I wanted to circle back to the book you wrote on climate, the climate book, in 2012. And it was interesting because you said that you kind of updated in 2024. That was the first thing I thought about, that anybody that has written a book back in 2012, just 12 years later, there is a lot that has changed with respect to the climate. So can you give us an idea of what you wrote about in 2012 that had to be updated in 2024?
Oh, basically everything.
Yes. Okay.
Literally every single page, there was something new.
I'm sorry, and that's just 12 years. You know,
that's right.
That's what's most disconcerting here, the rate of change that's going on. Go ahead.
There's a lot that has changed. There's a lot of figures that have changed, basically every one of them. And a lot of predictions back in the day, well, they have come reality already 12 years later, even though in my book from 2012, it might have said by 2030, we might reach 1.2 Celsius average global warming.
Right.
And we've already passed or are already at that point now. So, it was really eye-opening that this issue is more and more pressing, and it's developing quicker than most people think.
Yeah.
And also scientists can't, I learned throughout my work that scientists just can't give their, they have to be careful with their predictions. They can't give the maximum. Often they give off the average and just not to be, not to be criticized by their peers.
Or sound alarmist, climate scientist told us once. They're careful to try to stay within the mean or the median because to suggest a worst case scenario is to be alarmist, and that would turn people off or scare people away. But yet, you know, Esther, that's the way things seem to be unfolding. Things that were predicted to occur, say, in 2070 are now predicted to occur in 2050, and 2050's predictions are 2030. And like you say, just 12 years later, you know, things that you thought might unfold in 2030 are now happening now. And so that more extreme position is kind of expressing itself more and more.
That's correct. Yeah, definitely. It's a bit, in a way, it's a bit frightening and overwhelming. And that's also one reason why I think these books have their place, because they sort of bring us down to earth by showing us all the facts, and we ourselves can make up our minds whether what we believe or what we might want to change, what is our take on life after we know the facts? Does it change something? So,
Right. And that path forward. And that's a question. I want to table that for just a second. I want to get back to another thing that you cover in this book is world population levels and the regions in which growth and population is expanding. I actually was speaking with some people from Kenya yesterday about the high velocity at which their population is growing. So you break this down a little bit in the book. Why did you think it was important to cover world population and how that is affecting our CO2 levels?
Yeah, good question. So there's a bit of a controversial take on the world population and the link to CO2 emissions, even though both grow parallelly. It is important, I think, in that way that we all use raw materials every single day. I'm looking at a laptop right now that's probably made out of 30 different raw materials that have been shipped all around the world. And the more people we have on Earth, the more raw materials we are going to use and the more unsustainable will our lifestyle be. On the one hand, that is talking mainly for the developed world, where people can afford to consume a whole lot of things and stuff at, throughout a year, versus the rather poorer areas of the world. People might not even have ever bought something that they haven't made themselves on the other extreme. The more the developed countries, the more people and population growth we have in the developed countries, the higher will be the CO2 emissions will be.
Yes, our consumption is much more, and the rate at which we are utilizing, like you said, these materials it's overwhelming, really.
It's that 1%, the wealthiest 1%, consuming, I'll throw up a rough number, Esther, more than the bottom 30 or 40% of the world's population.
That's right.
That's where the real impact lies. It's in that area, and it's really the 1% that have to do something about their sustainable, how they define their quality of life and sustainability, as much as the bottom 30 or 40%.
And it's very clearly laid out in your graphics to understand and absorb how that is working. And I don't know if that we're really thinking about that on a day-to-day level or want to face ourselves in the mirror about how we're consuming these things.
Yeah.
But as you look at this, and you had just mentioned, I want to get back to this idea of maybe being hopeful. Once you have the facts, what do you do next? And do you want your book to be perceived as a hopeful way for people to understand what's happening with our climate and then have maybe be equipped to have a greater path or an easier way to tackle this forward?
Yes, pretty much. I love this book to be hopeful because it does include a lot of hopeful solutions that we are already having. Though the toolbox of solutions of the world is completely shockers full, as we say, and we just need to use these tools now. We can't just leave them in the toolbox. And so I'm equipping people with some of these tools in forms of knowledge and also like extra information that you might be getting online. There's free online courses from well-known universities that give you even more information than my book. And so I'd like to inspire people to really not close their eyes from all the information that's out there, but to really delve into it and to empower themselves through this knowledge.
And you do put in this book climate solutions.
Yes.
Which we appreciate. You have tools to minimize climate risks. So as we look at all of these facts, you do provide us with ways in which we can all take part and have a hand at decarbonization. And it's very well done. And I appreciate you doing this, especially for someone like me who is trying to have a greater understanding and wrapping our head around these big topics. It really is. I was going to ask you what demographics or age range you were looking at with the book, but I feel like it's perfect for me. I won't give away my age, but what age range do you think this book is good for?
In general, my books are marked about 12 years and older. And I have heard from quite a few teachers, even elementary school teachers, that say, I've used this book. Mm. And so even younger children could have take something out of the book, sure, with some parental guidance. But I think especially teenagers that are just finding their place in the world and that are a bit overwhelmed maybe by the misleading information that's out there on a whole different social media platforms, for example, that they could, with this type of book, sort of ground themselves and just literally sit down and get all this information, including all the sources in the back, so that they can actually also look further into the subject. So I think, I'd love to reach a lot of young people with my books.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us more about this book. This is Esther Gonzalez, and she has written a book called Atlas of a Threatened Planet, 150 Infographics to Help Anyone Save the World.
Website.
And where can people go to get your book or to learn more about you and maybe your past writings?
Yeah, they're welcome to get the book directly with my publisher, Island Press in DC, or at literally any bookstore, online or offline. Mm-hmm. They would be able to find the book. And also, if they want to know more about my books, I have a website, my last name, gonstala.com. And they're welcome to browse through the whole other books that I've done.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us today.
We look forward to the update.
Thank you. Thanks, Claire and Chris, for having me.
8 to 10 years. Right?
Oh, yeah. And are you working on another book currently?
I have currently published one in German, my native language, which is called What If? And it's 50 graphics, surprising and funny graphics about sort of saving the planet, a bit of climate change, a bit of raw material usage. So I really hope that one will also be translated and will hit the English speaking market soon.
Yeah, we look forward to that. Thank you so much, Esther.
Thanks, Esther.
Thanks, Claire and Chris.
All right.
Have a nice day.
You too.
You too.
And joining us now is local Anna Robertson, who is the co-founder of The Cool Down, and we are welcoming Anna back. Now, you came on this green earth a couple years ago when you had first launched The Cool Down, and we got a little bit of information about how you were going to do that. So welcome back first to the show.
Thanks for having me back. I can't believe it was a couple years ago. Wow.
I know. It doesn't feel
like yesterday.
That long either. Exactly. But you had launched The Cool Down at that point, and we were talking about kind of your ideas and what you were going to do moving forward. Now we're a couple years in, and it sounds like you have been very busy and have been making a lot of strides with The Cool Down. But first, if people hadn't heard this before, why don't you give us the 411 on what The Cool Down is and your purpose behind it and what kind of was the impetus for it?
Yeah, well, The Cool Down is really, a way to make it easier for anybody to be part of a cleaner future. I came at this as a journalist. I've been in the journalism world my entire career, and also as a mom of two who had been evacuated from wildfires in the middle of the night and saw up close sort of the impact of extreme weather. I was actually working in the local news space and, just felt like it was really hard for people to connect with what was happening in our climate and how it was going to affect our real lives. And of course, we're seeing that play out in real time now. I think everybody has been experiencing extreme weather and people feel overwhelmed. They may feel some fear around it. And when I started to get curious as a journalist and learn more about it, I realized there's so much innovation. There's so many solutions that are out there. And, by focusing on doom and gloom, we're not really helping anybody to see how they can be part of the solution. So what we do at The Cool Down, we have a website, we have a really fun newsletter. We make climate topics more engaging, focus on the innovations that exist and the practical ways that we can all be part of living healthier, saving money, and helping the planet along the way. So that's what we've been building. And, really remarkable. We set out to see if we could sort of build engagement at scale, and we have become the largest climate brand, the largest lifestyle brand focused on sustainability. We reach about 30 million people a month. you know, huge numbers, and we reach about 600,000 people in our newsletter, which is, you know, again, really fun to read. We don't sugarcoat the news. We try to explain things in plain English and always connect people to a solution that is on the horizon, the innovations that are coming, or things that people can do in their own lives to make a difference.
Yeah, I was curious about the gathering of that information, because it seems you do a lot here in the States and around our nation, but you also globally pull in some information around there. So how are you sourcing all of this information?
Yeah, well, we really do the research, so you don't have to. I mean, we have an incredible team of people who are curating information from everywhere, from the latest research studies and you know, sort of explaining those in plain English, you know, talking to experts in the field, reading really dense climate newsletters, and then also sourcing, you know, the greatest tips and hacks and things that real people are doing, whether that's on Reddit or Instagram or TikTok. So we've got kind of this great amalgamation of information from, you know, all the science to real life. Life, practical solutions. And that's kind of our secret sauce. That's what we're so good at.
Excellent. And you just launched a guide. Can you kind of walk us through why you thought that was important? And I think it gets back to that, getting that information out there in digestible pieces. But tell me why you launched that guide and what's in that.
Yeah, super important, because more and more we're seeing people not just wanting to read the articles and learn about the innovations, but actually take part and join, you know, join in the movement. And so we identified a bunch of different journeys that people were going on, whether that's reducing plastic in your life or modernizing your home or changing your yard. And we've created a guide where we help people understand the impact of those efforts. We give them simple steps to get on that journey and on that path. Folks can upload pictures, they can ask questions, and, you know, really sort of interact as a community so that everybody can find their place. And sort of once your eyes open, I mean, even locally, I've seen this, you know, when we start to make a change at the school or in the community, you sort of see this ripple effect, and then people get curious and they call up and they say, what about that? And maybe we should recycle this. And should we do a clothing swap? And maybe we should get a rain barrel. And that's the journey we want people to go on. And, you know, increasingly with, you know, the rebates and incentives that we're seeing rolling out nationwide and then state by state, we're seeing more and more interest in people wanting to save money and understanding some of the health impacts too of making these changes. And so we want to really be a trusted guide for people to start that journey.
Yeah, and it's interesting if you think about Park City and what we have done as a community. We have made a lot of efforts, and we are really moving in a direction to be cleaner, to be more sustainable. As you travel, though, I'm sure talking around our nation, what are you seeing, any disparities, and where can maybe a community like ours help lift up other communities? What are you seeing as far as like how we are coming together as a whole, not just in our community, but around the nation?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that the work that Park City has done, you know, the work of Mountain Towns 2030, I'm on the board of Mountain Towns 2030. I just came back from the annual summit last week, which was just remarkable, because Park City really, you know, put a bold goal out there to go, you know, net zero by 2030 and challenge other mountain towns to do the same. And in an environment in which, you know, many ski towns compete, right, for visitors and for rankings, you saw, you know, over 70 communities come together last week to share best practices and to learn about how they can accelerate that growth. And that is super exciting. And you're seeing that play out now. Some of those, you know, exciting things, that those seeds that were planted back when Mountain Town started, some of that is playing out. And so I think Park City can be a real role model, especially because we are, you know, seeing the impacts of climate change affecting, you know, the things we love and our ability to recreate. You know, my kids were indoors all last week because of the wildfires that were around, right? And, you know, we see the impact of, you know, a ski industry. Our entire economy revolves around the nature that we love, not to mention how much we hold it dear ourselves. And so, you know, it's critical that we protect it, and we are really on the front lines of making that happen. So really exciting to see what happened last week at Mountain Towns 2030, to see, you know, what the Park City Community Foundation is doing with food waste and trying to build a movement. I mean, if you're waiting for a sign to sign up for the food waste diversion program, this is your sign, because they have made it easier than ever before to, you know, to collect food waste, which is, you know, a lot of people just don't understand these things. They think, oh, if I put my food waste in the trash, it'll just decompose in the landfill. And it's just not the truth. It turns into methane gas, which is one of the most potent gases that exist. And it takes up so much of our landfill So it's something super easy to do. But you know what? It also saves you money when you reduce your food waste. And that's kind of how we lead with everything at the Cool Down, is really like, how can you save money? How can you live healthier by making these choices? Because we no longer really have to make a sacrifice on some of these things. So encourage everybody to look into the Park City Community Foundation's food waste program. I know they have a great sort of incentive going on right now, which, you know, really makes it easy and inexpensive to get going.
Park City also has incentives to change the way we landscape our homes, most notably removing non-native grasses from our lawns and replacing them with more native species too. So that's just another example that you alluded to with respect to how we change our approach to an understanding of how we impact the environment and our biodiversity too, in with respect to our landscaping. So practical solutions and best practices, terms you use, that's you mentioned food waste, landscaping. How about energy? What are some of them examples of practical solutions and best practices we as consumers can employ?
Yeah, energy is a huge one. I mean, there are very simple things to, you know, a little bit more complicated things. You know, the cheapest energy is the energy we don't use. And energy efficiency is not super, you know, sexy topic, but it's so important, especially as we go into the winter months, you know, looking at whether you can, you know, weatherize your home, add additional insulation, look for leaks in your doors and windows. You know, there are even free audits you can get. You know, go to your utility company and see what they can do for you. But that's an easy one that can save you money and also just make your home more pleasant to live in. But also, as you're looking to make upgrades in your own home or replace things, you know, looking for electric solutions as opposed to gas-powered solutions. And I've been, you know, learning this in my own home. We replaced our hot water heater with a heat pump hot water heater, which actually heats the water much more efficiently. So we're saving money and also, you know, makes us less reliant on fossil fuels. So, you know, looking at how you can start to integrate those things, you know, potentially replacing your snowblower with an electric snowblower as opposed to a gas-powered snowblower. We've done that in our lives. Obviously, depends on how steep your driveway is and how much snow you're getting, you know, whether your situation can withstand that. But we have a pretty steep driveway, and we have now a leaf blower and an electric snow blower, and we just use our batteries interchangeably. So it works really well, and you wouldn't believe how much, you know, toxic gas is coming out of those kinds of things and contributing to our emissions and creating an unhealthy environment for our kids. But they're also just better. I mean, they're just quieter and they're really fun to use. So, you know, there's simple things like that that can make a big difference. You know, looking at your heat tape as well, you know, and the efficiency of the heat tape. There's a company here in Park City. This is a personal topic
for Chris.
I get very exercised over snow melt systems and the inefficiency of them. Those are great, and I like those. And it just reminded me of something else that Rocky Mountain Power, you can go online, go look at your account, and you can look at your daily usage now. I'm sure they've had it for a while. I'm way behind the curve on that. But I looked at my daily usage one day where I ran my hot tub. I usually have my hot tub off. I don't use it. I don't need it. And I find it to be a waste of potential energy if you just have it on running all 24 hours a day if you're not going to use it. So I ran it for just 8 hours. To get the temperatures up from, say, it was like 65 up to 95 or something, 30. And my electricity for that day easily tripled. And that's how much hot tubs
cost you money.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. But there's an example of how Rocky Mountain Power can provide you education on your electricity use, depending on how you see it.
And there are so many incentives and rebates for these things. Well, I mean, you know, we got a big tax credit for putting that heat pump hot water heater in. So, you know, even things like smart thermostats. If you don't have a smart thermostat, like a Nest thermostat, you know, when you're out of town or if you're a second homeowner, you know, you can control that from anywhere, and that will save you money in addition to really helping make a big impact on the planet.
Absolutely.
I look forward to doing the same thing with my heat tape to quantify just how much electricity heat tape can consume particularly when you don't need it, i.e. when there's no snow on your roof.
And there's Park City company called Powder Watts. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but that's their whole business is tracking your heat tape usage. So, I mean, there's all kinds of innovations that are happening and lots of great tips that you can try.
We're speaking with Anna Robertson. She is the co-founder of the company The Cool Down. And Anna is a local Parkite, and we're talking about opportunities to live more sustainable lives and maybe consume a little less with respect to energy. We just talked. Let's move to water. Give us some best practices associated with the water we consume and how we can maybe consume a little less.
More efficiently. Yeah, so many things here. I mean, number one, use your dishwasher. I know it sounds really simple, but your dishwasher uses way less water than hand washing your dishes. And a lot of people think that they should be washing their dishes by hand, but you know, don't pre-rinse your dishes. I actually just got back from the P&G dish lab and saw, you know, 75 dishwashers that test all different kinds of conditions. And the main thing here, I mean, it changed my life because dishwashing is the number two most hated chore in your home behind washing your toilet. But literally, right. You know, I was pre-rinsing my dishes and doing all these things.
Really?
You know, you don't want to pre-rinse your dishes because your dishwasher has a sensor that sees how cloudy the water is. So when you put that, you know, dish in and it looks clean, it's not going to clean it in the same way. So don't pre-rinse your dishes. Put a lot more in your dishwasher because it's actually using way less water than hand washing. I think, you know, obviously landscaping is a huge one. I think we've all grown to love the look of native plants in our yard. We did this in our yard where we, you know, just took out most of the grass.
Yes.
And used much more water efficient grass. I think that's a huge one that, you know, that is just that's a no-brainer now. And obviously certain incentives here in Park City to flip your strip and replace that grass with, you know, with native plants.
Well, where I live in Racquet Club Village, the highest, the most costly line item on our HOA annual fees is water consumption. And that's water consumption to water grass. And again, I get rather exercised over the fact that we consume so much water and spend so much money to keep a grass green, which actually, again, from an ecological perspective, is a desert for bees and butterflies and pollinators. It's flyover country, as one scientist told us once, that growing grass provides little to no input with respect to the local biodiversity. So,
yep.
So another multiple reasons why we should flip our strip.
Exactly. That's what it's called. Yeah.
Right.
And another easy one is just to wash your laundry on cold water. A lot of us grew up thinking that we needed to wash our clothes on hot water, but actually, you know, cold water washes your clothes better. It prevents fading. And 90% of the energy that's used to run your laundry machine is used to heat the water. So with these high efficiency laundry machines and good laundry detergent, you really don't need to use hot water for most things in your house. And go ahead.
Because with respect to dishwashing, I know we're getting a little granular, but some people have told me that they prefer to hand wash dishes because they think that dishwashers can use a lot of energy because it's very hot. It's, you know, it's really hot water that's consumed. But that's, you're finding that's not the trade-off is better to use your dishwasher versus hand washing, which takes time. Also takes hot water, which is energy, and a lot more water, right? So in total, a dishwasher is better than hand washing.
Yeah, I mean, and a dishwasher is a black box, so you can't see into it. You don't know what's happening, and I think a lot of people, you know, think it's running tons and tons of gallons of water, but it's actually using so much less. If you do choose to hand wash your dishes, just, you know, put a tub in your sink and fill it up with some soap and, you know, do it responsibly, but many people are not thinking about that. So, you know, using your dishwasher is just an easy one to make that switch.
And a lot less time.
Okay. And get your kids involved. You know, they can put their dirty dishes. And the only tip I will say is know your dishwasher, because dishwashers have a filter. And in my house, we didn't realize that you need to clean that filter out. So get your manual out just once. You know, find out how it works. Clean that filter out on a regular basis. You know, every month or every week or whatever it is, and just know how your dishwasher works. And you know, may just save your marriage.
Or your dishwasher.
Or your dishwasher.
Right. Okay.
And I think that there are a lot of companies that are trying to move in this eco-friendly way. And there are a lot of, if you look at your dials on most of the dishwashers now, they do have that setting.
The eco
that
setting.
Can, yeah, bring it back, like the use of water even less.
Okay.
And you don't have to, because they have the extra rinse and they have all those options. But if you choose the eco option, my assumption is that it does use less water and less energy, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say for sure. I've heard mixed things about the eco functions. I think have to use your own judgment. But yeah, I mean, that's the future, like laundry machines that default to cold. You know, I mean, this is a huge focus for every company. That's been a big focus of my work over the last year. I've interviewed over 30 executives at top companies. And not only are they, you know, needing to meet their goals, they have more regulations that they're going to have to meet. But also they say sustainability is a real business opportunity. You know, consumers are interested in this. They want to make the right choices and we just need to make it easier for them to do so.
And this is probably what you're finding with the cool down is that education is power. And when people are educated about better ways in which they can utilize their energy and their water, they are going to look to these companies that are making these products, and they are probably going to use their dollars and their spend in a way that moves in that sustainable direction.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's probably the most important tip that I haven't even mentioned is, you know, as you go into your holiday dinners and have time with family, you know, mm-hmm. talk about these things and talk about them with your community, talk about them in the PTO meetings, normalize this conversation, because the more that we talk about it with each other, you know, it makes a difference. Even here in Park City, you know, if somebody's, you know, doesn't have a reusable container that you want, or you want to know if they're composting or whatever it might be, you know, ask for it, because consumers are really starting to understand and impact, you know, the way that businesses operate. Politicians need to hear from us about what priorities we have. Make sure you're voting and educating yourself about, you know, what's happening. We're very lucky. I just had the opportunity last night to moderate a town hall discussion with the U.S. Senate and House candidates from Utah for, you know, all about climate solutions put on by the Citizens Climate Lobby. And it was, you know, remarkable that we have a group of politicians on both sides of the aisle that are engaged in this topic. And that's because, you know, maybe it's not called climate change, but we call it, you know, air pollution. We call it the Great Salt Lake. We call it all these things that we see in our wildfire smoke, all of the things that we're experiencing, drought, extreme heat. Yeah. You know, we had more hot days this year than ever before. And, you know, we care about these things as individuals, and we need to make our voices heard so that those are the biggest things. I mean, beyond these changes you can make in your own home, it's really, you know, using your circle of influence. What can I do to, you know, to show that I care about these things? And that could be as small as, you know, some of the things that we do in our school, whether, you know, that's clothing swaps or recycling batteries or, you know, composting in the lunchroom, to, you know, actually lobbying, writing a note to, you know, your congressman, or, you know, buying a product from one of our great local establishments that believes in, you know, in these kinds of initiatives and has great sustainable products or even thrifted products. You know, we're so lucky in Park City to have great places to, you know, think about holiday shopping and to recycle our cardboard at the end of the season. And so, you know, each one of us just needs to feel like we're a part of the solution.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you said you have 30 million viewers a month.
Yeah, 30 million readers. Yeah.
Readers. I'm curious about that demographic. Have you broken down what age ranges those are? Because a lot of times I feel like it's an education up, because these kids are learning in school now, or there's a lot of obviously the generation that wants that planet to be healthy for them as they grow. And they're educating up to the older adults. So I was just kind of curious to know what your demographics.
Yeah, I mean, our
like.
Demographics very broad, because our content is distributed on Yahoo and MSN and Apple News and Smart News and everywhere. So we have a very broad audience, probably a little bit older actually, because I think younger people are spending a lot more time on, you know, on social media platforms. But I think that 25 to 45 is a real sweet spot for us, as well as a lot of grandparents, you know, who really care about these issues and want to do, you know, understand that a lot of these effects happened, you know, when we didn't didn't know what was going on. But, you know, I think especially starting a family, having kids, understanding what's in your products, what your kids are experiencing, some of the studies that we're seeing on the impacts of microplastics and the products that we use and, you know, gas stoves, whatever it might be. I think people are getting really educated and wanting to, you know, sort of that light bulb is going off, especially when you have kids and start to raise that family. So I think that's a sweet spot for us. But, you know, we're just seeing a huge shift, obviously, given our success. But a lot of it is the way that we approach these topics. You know, a lot of times we don't have climate in our headline. We're talking about gardening. You know, we're talking about a great thrifted find that somebody has come mm-hmm. upon. We're talking about the incredible savings that you can have by, you know, $150 a year by washing on cold water, or the $8,000 tax credit that you can get by making home renovations that are friendly for the planet. So, you know, as much as people want to save the planet, and we know that they do, you know, we're very busy and we have a lot going on in our lives, and we need to make decisions that are going to be right for us and our families. And a lot of those, you know, that's why we relate to people through what's going to work for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, just a couple more minutes. We're entering into the holiday season. So, you know, the elephant in the room is consumption and the potential for overconsumption. I think most notably of, say, the clothing industry, notorious with respect to material consumption and energy consumption to produce, you know, among other things, fast fashion. I know we only have a couple minutes, but any overarching thoughts about how we can kind of reduce our footprint in the area of clothing consumption, fast fashion, et cetera?
Yeah, buy gently worn, buy thrifted. I mean, there's just mm-hmm. so many great, and that's something young people are doing. You know, we have so many great options. I don't know if mm-hmm. anybody has checked out the new Christian Center store at the outlets.
Yeah.
So much fun stuff in there. It's awesome. We do a clothing swap at our school, and like the kids just love getting these items through the clothing swap because they're things they couldn't buy at a regular store. So I think if you can buy thrifted, and then, you know, just buy better. I mean, buy things that can be repaired, buy things that are higher quality, so they're not just, you know, trendy items. Also, you know, rent items. I've just, you know, did a bunch of speaking engagements, and I, you know, subscribe to Rent the Runway. I have a lot of friends that use Nuuly. You can actually rent clothes. This is a rented sweater that I'm wearing right now. You just like order what you want. They send this to me and I send it back and somebody else wears it.
When do you send it back?
At the end of my month of like my subscription, or I can buy it. But I'm buying a used item that somebody else has worn. So this, you know, that there you go. Okay. I just blew your mind.
What's the website?
I can see how Chris might not know about.
Well, I'm not doing it, but
Rent the Runway.
I love the idea.
But it's a great way to sort of like get that dopamine hit of wanting to get something new to wear to a gala or whatever, or a speaking engagement or a business trip.
Sure.
But then you can rent it and send it back, and there's, you know, so many great services like that now that you don't have to always buy new, you know?
So it takes the, like you say, renting gowns or other one-off tuxedos or something that you wouldn't want to have in your closet and only wear once or so. So it's taken it now to almost daily fashion that you can rent.
Yeah, we can talk about this after, Chris,
okay,
in terms of the detail. You can pick how many items you want each month, and then you just sort of look at, oh, I've got, you know, this event or this wedding or whatever,
sure.
And then you just pick however many items.
This radio show interview, we can begin. But again, it's renting clothes on that you would wear, that you would might buy, but you say, you know what, I'll just rent it, try it out. If I like it, I can buy it.
Exactly.
If not, I can send it back.
Exactly.
So that others might partake in it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And support our local stores, you know, support our local businesses. There are so many great sustainable products made here in Park City. And, you know, yeah.
Okay.
Happy
That's
holidays.
Great. Yeah. And I was just going to comment, your sweater is beautiful and
Thank
it really
you.
Brings out your eyes. So you made a great choice there. So Anna, tell us how people can get to the Cool Down, what the website is, how they can sign up for your newsletter and kind of keep up with what you're doing.
Just go to thecooldown.com. Please sign up for our newsletter if you're not already. Check out our guide, which is at guide.thecooldown.com. Feel free to reach out to me. I'm very involved in the community here and love hearing from people. So my email is anna@thecooldown.com. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Lots of resources there. It's Anna Robertson, who is the co-founder of The Cool Down. It's been around for about two
years.
Two and a half
years.
Wow. And we want to have you back and see how it's going.
Let's do it.
Be back.
I love it.
Excellent.
We got a minute. So let me squeeze in this news item.
News item. Okay.
Representatives from more than 175 countries are gathering to negotiate answers with respect to biodiversity starting this week in Cali, Colombia. And it's expected to be the largest United Nations biodiversity conference in history. It's called COP16, Conference of the Parties, 16, the 16th one. How these talks unfold over the next 2 weeks will help determine, for better or worse, the planet's future. Biodiversity is declining faster than at any time in human history. An intergovernmental panel of scientists found back in 2019. It's estimated that 1 million species are currently in danger of extinction. Even more common species are in decline, particularly with bird populations here in the U.S. and Canada, for example, are down almost 30% since 1970. So I'll pause there. We'll talk more about it as we go.
We'll have someone on the show to discuss.
It's a couple of weeks, to give us some updates on what happens and what hopefully will happen sooner than later with respect to biodiversity. So,
Let's first thank our guests. Today we had joining us Esther Gonzalo, who is an award-winning graphic designer who has just put together a book called Atlas of a Threatened Planet, 150 Infographics to Help Save the World.
That's right. And Anna Robertson, co-founder of The Cool Down.
No, you can email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas. We love to hear from you. You can give us topics and stories you'd like us to cover. That's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Thanks again for joining us.